This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me at Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run begins. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. It's the 16th of April. How was your weekend, Joyce?
Good morning, Sharad, Han and everyone else. Well, weekend was good, relaxing, stayed in, caught up on sleep, caught up with the family, basically just chilled. And my son had sports day on Saturday. So, yeah.
Okay. Aside from that, Did you drop off the grid, Han, over the weekend? I mean, are you the kind of guy that sort of just switches off over
the weekend? Yeah, well, I like to think so. But this past weekend, I decided to try out this new Thai massage place. And I had arguably the most painful, in a good way, the most painful Thai massage I've had, you know, at least that I can recall.
Yeah. I don't think it was off the grid because we were on work chat a lot over the weekend, remember?
Oh, that's true. But, you know, I don't believe Thai massage ever should be painful unless you're really stiff and, you know, kind of like in a bad place altogether. So might not be the fault of the masseur, it might be your fault.
How was your weekend, Sharad?
My weekend was good and filled with a lot of interesting things, including a art performance dinner at Ilham Gallery, which is downtown, where the artists went back in time and were trying to reconstruct what they call a Lanka Sukha dinner. And so it was old recipes and the old styling of preparation of food and stuff.
Wow,
and
so it sounds so creative.
Yeah, and I can tweet out some of the pictures to it.
Was it yummy?
It was, but it was one of those things where you have to like that kind of food, you know, this kind of Southeast Asian food with a lot of fish oil and kind of slightly stinky, but in a really good way, you know. And, of course, the use of your fingers. I think that was quite important.
Wow.
Also, over the weekend, because we had some news. In fact, we have just breaking news. Manchester City has won the Premier League. I'm not a football fan. Han, you are.
Yes, I am, and it's very sad, but we kind of saw this coming because for much of the season, they had that 12-13-point lead. And so with United losing, Manchester United are in second place, and they lost to West Brom 1-0. And so you've got City then winning the Premier League, despite the fact that Manchester United actually beat Manchester City not too long ago. So,
Joyce, are you a football fan?
No, not really, but World Cup, I like to watch that.
Okay, and anybody in your family, husband, kids?
Husband, not really. He's more into tennis.
Ah, okay, tennis. Mm. Also, over the weekend, there was Beyonce reunited with Destiny's Child.
They did. Did you guys see the video?
No, I did not. I was too busy with my Thai massage.
How long was this Thai massage? Maybe that was the reason for the pain. Okay. Day and a half. No, also, sad news of the weekend, Milos Forman, who is the director of that classic One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, died at the age of 86. Have you both seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
No.
Oh, it's a brilliant
movie.
Are we
missing out?
Absolutely.
We have to go watch
Nurse Ratched, one of the characters in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, is now a kind of an expression. You can refer to things and you can refer to her. She's, you know, she was a character, this kind of evil nurse. So she is the archetypal evil nurse. It comes from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I would recommend that too. Anybody. Okay, we'll be back with a look at a viral video and whether people are reading it correctly. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Pink Floyd with Saint-Tropez. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. We're looking at a viral video that the Ministry of Education is looking into because it involves students. Now, it's very interesting because it looks like the student is being beaten up. And I believe there are different words in English language as well as Malay that we use to describe this kind of action. Thumpit apparently is one of them. Thumpit.
Apparently, I think hazing is another one.
Ragging. Yeah. What else do we have?
Well, I think in Klang we called it lao as well. All right. So lao? Like the dish, you know. Lao. Anyways, look. So, having watched the video, as maybe an shameful as it is to admit it, this was something that we were doing in my all boys school in Klang, even back in the 90s. So, it was a way to, I guess, celebrate. And I'm using air quotes there. Your birthday, but sometimes it's not even to celebrate your birthday. So it's just this form of ragging. And Okay, at least how it manifested itself during my time in secondary school. And again, for the record, I'm not justifying it. It's just what we did, right? Especially in the all-boys school.
Okay, so is it, again, is it... I know it looks violent, but is the intention of the eight boys to injure the kid who is the subject of all this kind of ragging?
But is the victim, yeah, and also is the victim, when you see the video, right, Han, I mean, is the victim in pain? Is he enjoying it? Or is he actually saying, stop, please stop, you know? I mean, definitely there has to be a line. If they're not enjoying it, they have to stop. If you still continue doing it, then that's not right. I think people should respect that.
I guess.
Tell us what happens in Klang.
What happens in Klang?
And I'm assuming because you weren't, it wasn't that long ago that you were in school. So assuming this practice continues.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, obviously, it's evidenced by this video. And again, I want to make this very, very clear. I'm not trying to justify this type of action, but it happened. Now, at least the way it worked in my school and in my day, right? It was almost seen as a rites, you know,
rite of passage
of sorts, you know, because. At least for my friends, they would pick on those that they like. You know what I mean? You know, I know it's kind of...
But what's the rationale behind it?
There is no rationale. It's teenage boys. It's teenage boys. Okay, there's no rationale.
So you just think about this, Joyce. I think teenage boys is important part. In fact, any teenagers, whether the boys or girls, because, you know, girls have been involved in this ragging, hazing controversies over time as well. But it's an outlet for all those energies, right? Mm. And I think being rough and playing rough is something you see parents do with their kids as well, right? You know, especially with boys, the idea is you wrestle a bit and you kind of mock punch, and kids are allowed to punch a bit. You know, we allow children to hit us to some extent, right? Mm. And it's about that physicality, because that physicality is also very seen to be a kind of bonding mechanism.
Yeah, but I don't get it to get physical and assault the person with a broom and kicking them and all that. I think if the victim is saying, please stop, then there should be...
I watched the video, although I didn't really analyze it. I don't think you could really hear the so-called victim...
screaming in pain.
Screaming in pain, or like, you know, saying, please stop. Like, because it's almost understood, like, it's a rite of passage. And, okay, at least for my friends, we would be very selective. We're like, okay, can we go with this guy or not? Now, if it's...
So you planned it. Like, you sat around the canteen plotting these things.
In a classroom. And so, like, if it's somebody that you don't like anyways, then you won't even do it, right? I mean, you could be just sitting there mindlessly doing your homework and whatever, and all of a sudden, the rest of the class breaks out in chorus, happy birthday. And if you know you're not singing, you're it.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Well, I think one of our producers is saying that for his school, he got ragged and then flaw, then ached. But it was funny, but not so rough. Until, you know, someone would be severely injured. So I guess...
Yeah. The big difference between this video and back then is the video, right? You know, because back then it happened pretty much on a daily basis, right? Mm. And there was no evidence of it, so parents couldn't freak out. It was almost like this code that we had among students at that all-boys school. Again, not saying that it's right, nor should that be done away with, and that's something for the ministry and authorities to decide.
Okay, so the thing is, you know, if you're committing something quite heinous and you think it's a crime, would you videotape yourself? And apparently, yes, the answer is yes, you still would, because... criminals have a fascination with their own actions, I think. So that's one thing. But you're right. I mean, I do think that sometimes the fact that videos have gone up is that not everybody has the context or the sense of the culture, and they don't know the consequence. I mean, the consequence might not be as bad as what the video looks like.
Mm,
yeah.
Nice.
Well, I guess, you know, there could be instances whereby the victim, I'm not saying this particular one in this video, but, you know, you take it and then you dish it back as well. You know, so it was just this cultural thing that was going on in all boys schools. I don't know, and although I wouldn't be surprised if it has resorted to even higher levels of violence. But generally, at least, you know, back then, it was pretty, you know.
So it was pretty benign, right? Is that what you're saying?
I guess.
Well, look, if you look at the picture, and it's still unfortunate that we've tweeted out the story, and it still has a foot that looks like it's going to about to land on the guy's head. I'm sure that wasn't the case, but at any rate, that's why it looked kind of terrifying, I think, for those of us who aren't involved.
Yeah, you can see from the body language as well, from the photo, right? It's not exactly very positive.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we'll be back with a look at some of the positive things in our life that do come from social media and the fact that things can go viral. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Eric Clapton and Crossroads. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. It is the 16th of April. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We asked you if you've ever been involved in hazing or if you've ever been involved in tempeh. I don't know.
Tempeh. Lau. Semua kena.
Okay. So the point that you brought up just now, Han, which is quite interesting, is that it used to be a kind of secret thing that boys did, or it was very limited to the actual, you know, context in which things happen, right? So people knew, the teachers probably could tell whether this meant with, you know, to be a brutal act or whether this was just done in fun.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, heck yeah. I mean, because, you know, in my school, you could kind of hear these choruses of happy birthday going off from different ends of the compound. And you can tell the difference between a lao or tempeh session going on versus a gang fight. That's a very distinct difference.
Well, there was a gang fight at your school.
No, this is Klang. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't say it that way because I spent a year in Klang when I was like 8 and I loved it.
And that's why Sharad's the godfather over there.
That's right. Okay, so when it comes to the social media and all the platforms, including, you know, WhatsApp as a conduit for putting out information, we kind of lose one thing. That's context, right? Context is so important. But, you know, to what extent, if this, you know, like this video went viral on Instagram, can it go viral on Instagram? Does anybody know enough about Instagram to tell me whether something like this can go viral?
Choice, you're on Instagram,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I am on Instagram. Yeah. Well, it can. It depends on how it's shared. I mean, you don't share an Instagram post, but
you
it
don't,
can trend.
Right? Then that's very different from Facebook.
It's very different from
right?
Facebook. But if it's an open profile and it's not private, it can trend. It can trend on a main page where people can go and explore. So when it's trending and exploring, you can see, and from there, it might come up on your feed. And from there, you can watch the video.
So what's very interesting about the Instagram is that today, when there's hashtag delete Facebook and, you know, and also changing fashions and desires of people, and of course that scandal with Facebook, is that business analysts are saying that Instagram might actually be Facebook's savior, and it was bought in 2012, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And if you look at, say, well, and I guess, Joyce, you would be best placed to comment on this because I'm not on Instagram. I don't think... Sharad, are you on Instagram? No.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are.
But I don't really do it.
I think he's very active.
I'm not active at all.
Twitter, right?
I'm
active on Twitter. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're active on Twitter. I'm more active on Facebook. And Joyce, I dare say you're more active on Instagram. But looking at the business models, for example, right? The idea is that Instagram could be the answer for Facebook's longevity, given Facebook's turmoil right now with the data privacy, right? And I guess you are mainly confined to sharing pictures, well, and now short videos as well on Instagram.
That's right.
As opposed to on Facebook, it's a lot more personal, it's a lot more interactive, and that's where the debates actually erupt.
Actually, Instagram can also be personal and interactive because I think a lot of people find Instagram is, it could be a healthier Facebook in a way because you share like personal photographs rather than viral news. And sometimes I feel Facebook can be a bit, it's just too much going on. Everyone's sharing stuff like articles and everything. And it's just cluttered. Whereas Instagram, you just look at photos. The feed is just photos. So, and then there's captions there. And I feel it's more personal. You can actually get to know someone through Instagram, I feel, better than Facebook.
Okay, so that, in fact, is the claim from Instagram, right? And some of the strengths of Instagram is precisely that there's the level of toxicity that doesn't seem to be generated through the Instagram platform. But perhaps for people who want to engage in conversation, Facebook is still a better platform.
You can engage in conversation on Instagram. You can comment and it can go on. And also, you can engage with people through their Instagram stories. So you watch the story and you can actually comment with the person. It's pretty engaging. And I must say, notice the trend right now, what's happening with Facebook and Instagram. A lot of celebrities, they're deleting their Facebook accounts, but they're not deleting their Instagram accounts. Yeah, what's that telling you? Yeah, you know?
And also, it tells us one thing that a lot, apparently, according to this article we'll tweet out, is a lot of people don't realize that Instagram is part part of Facebook, or that they share some at the back end, they're sharing information, right? And that there is data mining going on in Instagram, and it is hooked up to Facebook in many ways.
And I actually visited Facebook's campus not too long ago, just a few years ago, and you're right, you know, Instagram's office is right there, smack in the middle of the very impressive Facebook headquarters, you know, so they share the same massive canteen and all the goodies that you find on Facebook campus. But I think, you know, the content and the mannerisms, I guess each platform will have its own culture, right? You know, I think that's the idea. Because Facebook tends to be skewed towards the older demographic, so perhaps the content would require a slightly more brain processing power, I guess.
Are you saying young people have no brain power?
Well, you know, in terms of like, say, the content, in terms of the content that's shared on Instagram, you're just flipping through pictures,
the Joyce
right?
Q Snapchat. Snap, you use the word story? Story actually came from Snapchat, right? And Instagram picked it up.
You're right. So Instagram picked it up. And I think there was a discussion prior to taking that up. I think some of them were in, they were not agreeing. Some people agree on taking up the story part. Some people disagree that Instagram should take on the Snapchat story, kind of, because it looks like they're copying. But in the end, they made a decision to do with Instagram stories. I think that helped them. Instagram stories is definitely something that is a great addition. Everyone's using that right now. And a lot of younger people have abandoned Facebook. I mean, even before this whole Cambridge Analytica thing happened.
Analytica, absolutely.
All of them are... I mean, because the great Instagram is so much easier to use, and I feel it's a lot more personal.
Well, easier / less brain processing power. Look, if I'm going to rank social media platforms, I think it'd be Twitter at the top, you know, judging by the conversations I've seen on Twitter. Twitter at the top in terms of, you know, how much brain processing power is required.
Right.
Then Facebook, then Instagram, then Snapchat. Because that's where they
Tell us what you think of Han's ranking. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio if you're really smart. Or you can WhatsApp us if, I don't know, where... Does WhatsApp in your ranking?
WhatsApp is, brain power? What's that to you?
Well, it's not really...
Actually, because mostly it's just sharing, right?
Yeah.
Sharing without context.
You know, for Instagram posts, you also have to curate it. You have to post up. You know, I mean, when you put on captions, it's different. And when you do your stories, it's different. Wow. You still need brain power for that.
Did Instagram pay you or something? What's going on here?
Hold on. We're coming up to the first bulletin in the morning, and taking us there is Bill Withers with Lovely Day. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Killers with All These Things That I've Done. I'm sure I couldn't. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. What are the things that we've done? We're all on social media. And thank you to Kita Samong Pangasot, that's a Twitter handle, by the way, who's created a poll from the things that you said just now, the ranking that you gave. You already had your ranking. Could you repeat your rankings to us, Han? What was it that you said in terms of brain power and social platforms?
All right, so we are ranking these social media platforms in terms of how much brain processing power is required. Okay, so at least in Han's ranking...
You're speaking yourself in the third person, are you, Han?
In Han's ranking, first you got Twitter, then Facebook, and then Instagram, and then Snapchat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, although we're not on Snapchat. But I guess the caveat here is this, because the conversations that you see on Twitter is dependent on who you follow, right, by and large. So
if you follow smart people like
I do, so hence the conversations will be smarter.
Oh, that's potential. I mean, it's also who likes a word. So some people are more word-oriented, text-oriented, which, you know, and because there's video and visuals also on Twitter, but Twitter was essentially kind of word-driven in the way that Instagram is essentially visual-driven.
Visual,
like
but there's
image,
also words because you have to put on the caption, and on your Instagram stories, you can actually add titles and all that. So it depends on...
Titles, like two words. We used to have 140 characters and we had two...
You know, sometimes it's not the amount, it's the quality, right? And how it makes sense to the post.
Mic drop.
To be fair to Joyce, looking at the 18 votes that have come into this poll already, created by @ChuiYC, Instagram is actually ranked higher than Facebook. Go figure. Yeah. So Twitter still in first place, 56%. Instagram, 28%. Facebook, 11%. Maybe I just got smarter Facebook friends than you guys. I don't know.
That's not a mic drop, though. Okay. Now, what's not on that list, and there are many things you can put on the list, is Reddit. And this is an American social news aggregation and web content rating and discussion website. So where does Reddit, where do you locate Reddit and all this? What's interesting about Reddit is recently they've been involved in a discussion about the line between free speech and hate speech or things that perhaps is not so good to viralize.
Yeah, so according to Steve Huffman, who is the CEO of Reddit, for example, racist slurs are actually permitted on this popular social news and discussion site. So I guess the idea is, I guess his reaction is to whether or not open racism should be something encouraged. And I guess, you know, with this discussion, and this is something that we have touched on several times on the Morning Run, it's, you know, whether or not this risks normalizing such kind of language, right? Or such language.
Well, yeah, he also said that on Reddit, the way in which they think about speech is to separate behavior from beliefs. So this means on Reddit, there will be people with beliefs different from your own, and sometimes extremely so. So when users' actions conflict with, you know, their content policies, they take action. But then again, they're opening this up. Racist slurs are permitted, as you mentioned, Han. And yeah, it's something different, right?
Open up
for discussion.
Right. So we actually turned to Swaran Singh, who's a lawyer with Shaker and Swaran Advocates and Solicitors, for his view about the line, the very sometimes blurry line between free speech and hate speech. And this is what he had to say.
Previously, you know, if you had instances where you could control people who are going for a certain meeting or charama or whatever, the groups are smaller, it's easy to maintain, you can identify the location, and these guys are not named. But when it comes to the online arena, things change. They've got your millions of people who are under different names. It's hard to track down who they are. How do you then control these people? And for them, they are like armchair warriors. They're able to say things and do whatever they want, but if you ask them to come outside and say it in a public space or to someone else, they will not even say those things. But behind the screens, they are emboldened and they do more things. It's a wild, wild west, you know, of the online arena. It's a new environment. It's a new space. What do you do? Some take a position that I'm not going to take any censorship. Some take the position that you might have to, because this gives space to those who wouldn't do naughty or bad things to go out and do naughty and bad things. So I think it's stuck in between.
That was Swaran Singh, a lawyer with Shaker & Swaran Advocates and Solicitors, talking about the Reddit decision, as well as I think it's a decision that has to be made by global social platforms now about where they draw the line and what they allow on their platforms.
Right. And in Swaran's opinion as well, you know, these platforms like Reddit should be passive in the sense that it lets people just go out there and have their say. So hence, you know, you've got the Reddit CEO saying that, hey, you know, racist slurs, that's totally okay. I guess from their point of view, they are being Reddit, right? The idea is to allow people to have their moment of catharsis, right? You just let it out there and hopefully it doesn't actually translate into some physical, real-world violence.
Yeah, but what Swaran says has a point as well. He says a lot of them, they're anonymous online and they can do whatever. I mean, they become keyboard warriors. And I think in his words, he said armchair critics, right? But keyboard warriors in a way. So people hide behind that. And, you know, a lot of people can do a lot of things when they are just behind the keyboard. And is that right? You know, when they start making all these comments and you can't track where is this coming
from? Okay, let me give you the results of the poll so far. Twitter's on top with 63%. Instagram has tipped Facebook, 19%. Facebook has 15%. Snapchat, 3%. Apparently, drawing putting animal faces on your own portrait or your own profile is not considered brain power. Thing.
Although keeping in mind that poll is being done on Twitter, so I guess there's an inherent bias.
Okay, we'll be back with a look at a tycoon who apologized for his political views. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Sam and Dave with Hold On, I'm Coming. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh, Tan Chung Han, and the Morning Run continues. It's just 51 minutes past 6 in the morning. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Include your name so that we know who you are. We were talking about social media, a lot of talk about it, and I must admit, the fact that Donald Trump is on Twitter and that uses Twitter for diplomacy of all things, moves markets and creates global tensions, means that I am a little humbled. I'm humbled that this platform that I love is being used by by, you know, by a man like Donald Trump.
Yeah, so are you sure it uses, it needs brain power, Han?
Well, I guess brain power, brain and power is a subjective, right?
Okay, so let's look at this other story that's quite fascinating, which is the story of a tycoon, the guy who owns Supermax, who came out 5 years ago in support of Pakatan Rakyat then, but has since now changed his mind. But not only did he change his mind, he's now come out to declare it in a press conference.
And so Dato Sri Stanley Tai actually apologized to the prime minister, well, the caretaker prime minister now, Dato Sri Najib Tun Razak, apologizing for his support for the opposition in GE13. So it's rather interesting and I guess intriguing press conference, and given the statement that was made, because, you know, for one, you've had 5 years to make this apology, but yet he makes this apology on the eve of GE14. I mean,
only just changed his mind.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, I don't know. And some of the reasons that were cited as well, you know, so for example, you know, saying that it's wrong for businessmen to be involved in politics. Now, you compare those kind of statements versus, say, what Robert Kwok wrote in his book. He was just brazen about it. Just said, hey, I made donations to MCA and UMNO when it was called upon, right? Mm. So I guess there's a very broad spectrum there in terms of the involvement of businessmen, the active involvement of businessmen in politics.
Well, yeah, the timing of this definitely has raised some questions, and people are definitely talking about that and the things that he's saying, because Stanley Tai is saying that he regrets that in G13 he believes that he was influenced by the opposition, and being a businessman, he should not get involved in politics, right? And later in 2014, remember, he was charged for insider trading, and he was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment last November. So he's currently appealing his conviction now.
And I wonder if that's going to be part of the way people read this apology, right? They're going to be saying it's not just that he had views in 2013, but he's just been convicted and sentenced. And whether that is weighing on his choice of coming out, the timing of it, as well as what he's saying. Because to say that you're influenced by an opposition party is to say nothing really of significance, because we're all either convinced by one side or the other, right? And that in itself is not a suggestion that... I mean, if it's a suggestion that he's naive somehow, that itself would be problematic.
Well, I guess the difference is that, you know, because he made such a public show about it, right? He attended various ceramahs, and he said as much as well in a couple of states, I think Johor, for example.
And this was in 2013. His interview with Bloomberg, I mean, that's where he said that he was supporting the federal opposition.
Yeah, you know, and apparently those comments went viral, and, you know, he actually went out there to the ground, attended some ceramahs, et cetera, and actually made some donations, I believe, as well, right? So now you've got this about turn, right? And, if you take his comments at face value, so there appears to be some kind of economic justification or some business justification for it. So he talks about, he being Dato Sri Stanley Tai, talks about, for example, the policies that the BN coalition has versus the policies at the state level, which apparently have hampered his business expansion.
Yeah, he criticised the caretaker Selangor state government in handling the state's water supply issue, right? So he's saying that their last two projects, they have been delayed for 2.5 to 3 years due to water supply issues in Selangor. And that's where most of their plants are located. I think 8 out of 11 Supermax factories were located in Selangor. And I remember at that time, back in G13, I'm not sure whether pre-G13 or slightly post-G13 or when he made the comments, the stock price of his shares kind of dropped. The whole timing of it, you know. And I remember in the 2013 interview with Bloomberg, I think he mentioned that he supported Pakatan to protect the future of his children.
And so the question is, what's changed, right? And of course, people can change their minds about the political parties that they support. I mean, that's part of the democratic game. We are allowed to change and shift our loyalties, and perhaps also assess the performance of particular governments, right? He might have been much more bullish about a Pakatan government in 2013. Now, 5 years after a Pakatan government, say, in the state of Selangor, he might be less bullish or maybe, in fact, quite critical. So
right.
That's legitimate.
But also going back to this idea about whether or not business people in the business community should actually be or should actually make such an open show of politics, you know, because you risk, say, reputational risk, you know, you risk being dragged into the political muck, you know, as opposed to drawing a distinct line between business as usual and politics, right, if such a distinction can be made.
Okay, we're coming up to the next Bulletin of the Morning, and taking us there is Iron and Wine with The Devil Never Sleeps. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. It's 6 minutes past seven in the morning, and it's the 16th of April 2018. We turned our attentions down south, where IKEA Singapore, because IKEA being the furniture manufacturer, they've given Malaysian staff an extra day of leave to vote in the upcoming GE14. Now, we're not going to be talking about how Singaporeans at IKEA are griping about this. Apparently, they're not
really?
Very happy.
Yeah, they're
yes,
not happy,
yes,
apparently.
Yes, they're not very happy.
Yeah.
They're angry, in fact, that their colleagues from Malaysia have been given a day off.
An extra day off.
Okay, but we have also had politicians weighing in on this question of all those voters, some 300,000, 400,000 voters, Malaysians who are potential voters who are based in Singapore. In fact, the caretaker Deputy Prime Minister Ahmad Zahid Hamidi came out to say that if you don't get a leave, you know, don't worry about it. You don't have to come back and vote. You know, it's probably best not to, you know, sacrifice your leave for it. And because that has created the conversation around Malaysians who are abroad and whether they should come back to vote.
Yeah, I think there are definitely a lot of Malaysians working in Singapore right now. A couple of my friends are there. And my friend actually started looking at flights as soon as the polling dates were announced to go back to Penang. And immediately she said, oh no, the flights, the prices have gone up already. And this was just nearly 1-something, 2 in the afternoon. We were on group chat talking about the elections. Mm. And I mean, but you can see that a lot of Malaysians who are working abroad, a number of them, I think more of Singapore, because my other friends who are in Australia are not coming back. So yeah, it depends on the proximity as well.
Yeah, I guess you can take the Malaysian out of Malaysia, but you can't take the Malaysia out of the Malaysian, because, you look, we have been, well, not just we, but political parties have been beating on the GE14 drum for well over a year now. And yet, you know, I guess true to the stereotypical Malaysian spirit, you know, people are leaving things to the last minute. I got a friend in China, you know, who's only after the EC has announced the polling date, and she's like, oh, where do I go and register? It's like, doesn't work that way, okay?
Yeah,
doesn't
it's
work
unfortunate.
That way, people. Yeah.
Unfortunately, because in some countries, that wouldn't be a problem. That if you had been told that an election was coming up, you could register one day and vote the next. But let's turn to Zhu Han Law, who is a student in the US, and he's creating a single website Help. It's one of those initiatives that's emerged around the announcement of GE14 about the need to think about, you know, our responsibility to vote. Now, he's based, as I said, in the US, and we asked him if he thinks it's important for Malaysians abroad to come back and vote.
I mean, you know, it's going to be my first time voting, and it's actually a fact that I'm quite ashamed of. But at the same time, I've also, you know, the last few elections, it's also been very difficult for me. So I think I understand that, you know, why, you know, from my own personal experience, why it's really difficult to come back and vote.
We also asked him about other Malaysians in the US, friends of his, and whether they'll be coming back to vote.
Everyone would love to. I mean, everyone would love to, but it's not cheap. That's one. They have families. I mean, obviously jobs, and plus, we don't really know when elections are, so it's very difficult to actually plan ahead. So I'm actually able to vote this time because I happen to have a trip planned. But you know, having realized that organization truly matters, you know, if you look at how, like, you know, Obama 2008, you know, you won in no small part because of his ability to organize, like, people from the grassroots. So if we can kind of realize that we can each do that, and if we just try our best to enable each other to do that, I think we can definitely do, you know, much better than just Facebook posting and expressing how we feel on social media. You know, there's just little things that we can actually do to help people physically get to where they need to vote, because I think we all want to get there. I think we have to go to the next step, which is to just enable people to actually do it. And I think that's something we can all do, yeah.
That was Zhu Han Law. He's part of an initiative to get Malaysians to vote at GE14. Very practical problems for Malaysians who live abroad, and because there's a huge Malaysian diaspora across the world, not everybody can be part of it.
Wait, hold on. Correct me if I'm wrong. So it's only those who live in neighboring countries, like Singapore, Southern Thailand, Philippines, who have to, I don't know about Philippines, but I know Singapore, Southern Thailand, who have to come back and vote. Whereas those who live further away, they can still qualify for postal voting, right?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm not entirely sure where the postal voting situation is. And I think there's still a lot of difficulties. The bar is pretty high in terms of organizing. And if you think of Malaysians in Singapore, right, how much easier it would be for the if the mission there, the High Commission there, organized for Malaysians to vote in Singapore.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to come back. They wouldn't
That's
have
right.
to take full day leave, perhaps. Mm. As say, the Indonesian
so
embassy
Malaysians.
Does this for Indonesians. Over a million Indonesians vote in Malaysia when they have their elections. Why not Malaysians in Singapore?
Good point, Sharad. And actually, Han, coming back to your comment earlier, you're saying that Malaysians waiting to the last minute to book and all that, some of them, they have to wait for the polling date because you do not know when, right?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I wasn't talking about booking the plane together. Yeah. That's obvious. But in terms of registering and actually, you know, overcoming that inertia to get actively involved in the political process, right? You know, making sure that you have signed up and you're on the electoral roll, you know, those kind of things. Now, I will say, okay, this is my personal experience, and I guess like Zhu Han, not something entirely proud of in a way. When I was in the States, I missed the 2003 and 2008 general elections here in Malaysia. And, you know, I dare say some of, you know, Malaysians who do go abroad, or at least this was the case for myself, and I'm speaking personally here. The reason you go abroad is because, you know, one of the reasons is because you want to kind of distance yourself away from home, right? You're trying to seek better opportunities abroad, right?
And but not necessarily cut your ties, right? So
well, for me, it was.
Okay, yeah, for you,
yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah. So I'm saying, I'm speaking personally here. No, for me, it was, right? Obviously, it didn't really work out because I'm here right now.
Running away from Klang. What is going on in Klang? You're chasing away some of your brightest children. The child of Klang, Tan Chung Han, was running away. You know, from
but he's back.
You know,
he's
the prodigal son.
Yeah, we have an ad playing on BFM now talking about like the pride of Klang, and I was thinking, oh, they're talking about me. Oh no, not really.
Yeah,
they're
talking
about some property.
Some interesting, you know, conservation work and urban renewal that's happening in Klang. But that's a side note.
So, like, because you know, with the mentality of okay, I'm trying to pursue a new life. You know, I'm trying to seek greener pastures here. So, you know, there was this apathy towards what's going on at home. Well, for me, again, I'm speaking for me.
Han, yeah, I think you have a point because I have some friends who have migrated out of Malaysia already. And to them, they're like, this is only where they are. This is only where our home is. And there's a reason why we left Malaysia. And I think for them, they're not registered to vote. I sent out links to like things that you can do, you know, when leading up to elections, things you can do when you're overseas, you're an overseas Malaysian, you can sign up and all that. And basically, they're saying that, look, you know, we don't want to vote and there's a reason why we left the country. And yeah.
And that's fair enough, right?
Though.
I mean, but for those who whose choice to go abroad to work doesn't include either changing your citizenship ultimately or in terms of cutting your ties with Malaysia, and your sentiments about Malaysia, should the bar be high for them in order to participate? And I think that was what Global Bursa as a campaign tried to do. It was trying to say, well, they are Malaysians because, you know, who want to participate and they should not be penalized, you know, because of the fact of being far away, because other countries do it.
Right, okay, but now to be fair, so I'm reading up this article on the edgemarkets.com. So it's those who reside in southern Thailand, Singapore, Brunei, and the Kalimantan province of Indonesia cannot apply for postal voting. So one would think, well, by you know, just simple deduction, that those in the States can then apply for postal voting. So there are mechanisms in place for them to take advantage of it. So why didn't they do it? Why aren't they doing it? Then I guess that boils down to the micro context, right? The individual will have their own reasons for why. They could say apathy, like I was, you know, back then.
Yeah.
I really had no idea.
Interesting. You talk about about people abroad and their relationship to the country. There are people here who have very similar. I was talking to a Grab driver, the young man who says he's missed a few general elections. He said, but I've registered this time. I said, when did you register? He said, I registered in January. I said, well, as far as I know, if you've registered in January, you're not going to make it to the rolls. So I said, please check and find out if. But, you know, and then he says, well, you know, it's a pity because this time he was thinking about it and he did want to participate.
Whether or not you registered, I mean, many years ago or currently, you should still check the EC website to see where you're voting and whether the constituency has changed for you. And basically just to make sure that all the data is there. Don't wait until the last minute. Until May 9th to check it, right?
Right. I mean, and think about it, right? You know, because we actually had the risk of, well, I guess, a risk of elections being called even from last year. So if elections were actually called last year, then it's that individual, Sharad, that you spoke to would have missed the general elections completely, right? So there is, I guess, some level of blame to be assigned to the individual as well.
Absolutely.
Why did you wait till this year to sign up?
Absolutely. There's personal responsibility, but there's structural issues.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Automatic registration would have eliminated all these problems, right? If we had a system when you reach 21, you're automatically registered and you're on the rolls, then none of this conversation would be redundant. Mm. But we don't have that. It happens in many other countries. Mm. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.